And welcome everybody to the Lakers Outsiders podcast. I am your host, as always, Gary Kester. Joining me today is Hani. Hani, say hi to the folks.
Hi, everybody.
All right, we are here to talk about the very exciting, entertaining, and controversial Lakers and Mavericks game. The Lakers lose 92-90. Really tough game to lose because they played really, really well. Hani, I'm going to throw it to you. Just kind of recap some things that stood out to you, some things you liked, some things you didn't like.
I think best thing by far for me was Julius Randle getting back on track. He started off the game just hitting. I think he had four jumpers in like the first quarter, maybe first half, which is insane. But it was almost a throwback to the first game against Dallas where he had like 22 and 15 or whatever, and he had, I believe, 16 and 11 tonight. So it was just a good bounce back game from him, and that was really nice to see.
Yeah, admittedly, I didn't get a chance to watch the full game. All I'm really basing it off of is highlights, but in the highlight montage, they showed pretty much all of his jumpers right away, and it was really nice to see that he's really trusting that jumper and showing some confidence in it, even though he's kind of struggled with it. I mean, there's been times this year where it's gone down. He's hit. He had that stretch there where he hit like a three in like four or five straight games. But yeah, it's really nice to see that. I think it's really nice for him when he gets to play against Dirk Nowitzki. Dirk in his old age is having a hard time keeping up with Julius most times. But no, it was really good. And the Lakers, I mean, they lost by two to a team right now that would be in the Western Conference playoffs. So, yeah. You know, I mean, obviously they had to play pretty well. Was there anything else that really stood out to you?
Jordan Clarkson had one of his better games in a long time. Just a little bit of everything. He was close to a triple-double, though he didn't play a whole lot in the fourth quarter. But he had, 18 points, 7 assists, which is a really good sign, and 6 rebounds. So I think he had a really good all-around game. He didn't really settle for jumpers that much, though he did hit a couple of threes, got to the rim pretty effectively, and just the fact that he was able to get his teammates involved was probably the best thing.
Yeah, you mentioned the assists, and that's been kind of a big thing for me with Clarkson is I'd like to see him kind of create a little bit more because I think he did a better job of that last season, You know, just creating for his teammates. Of course, he was playing – I mean, I guess he is playing point guard now, but with Russell there – you know, a little bit of the facilitator burden, so to speak, is kind of taken away from him. But yeah, I mean, you want to see guys move the basketball. You want to see unselfish play, and, you know, you just want to see better ball movement. And, you know, his assists, I don't know his averages off the top of my head or anything, but it seems like they've been down this year. But, yeah, 18 points, 7 assists, 6 rebounds, 6 of 15, like, that's okay. It's not great. It's not terrible. But, yeah, I mean, that's – if you can get 18, 7, and 6 out of him, I mean, that's kind of what you're hoping for with him. So him and Randle played really well. Russell, I noticed, kind of following the game on my phone, started slow but played pretty well, I think, in the fourth quarter. Is that right?
Yeah, fourth quarter he kind of started taking over, if I'm allowed to use that phrase. But, yeah, the first half was kind of – well, part of the reason that he wasn't great in the first half was I think he only played about 9 minutes, so he didn't really have a whole lot of time to get adjusted to the game. Mm-hmm. And when he was in the game, he did good things, and the Lakers' offense moved better and flowed better like usual with him in the game. But, yeah, statistically it wasn't great in the first half. Second half, he played much better defense. They were – just abusing J.J. Barea with him in the post and in the pick and roll. Mm-hmm. And he was just doing a whole lot of nice things, hitting shots and getting players involved and just a little bit of everything.
Yeah, and that's something I was hoping that they would do at least a little bit of is let Russell post up J.J. Barea. I mean, he's got such a size advantage. And he's going to have a size advantage with most point guards that he goes against. You know, the thing for him moving forward is going to be a strength advantage, you know, strengthening that lower body and just, you know, his body naturally developing as he grows a little bit older. And, you know, he'll be able to do some damage down there. We've seen it a number of times this year where he takes a guy into the post and scores over him. So that's definitely something that's part of his game now, but could really become a weapon in the future once his, you know, increases that lower body strength. So definitely something to keep an eye on. Okay, so let's talk about the ending a little bit. I did get to see, just from the highlights, pretty much how it all unfolded. Lakers lost 92-90, but a very controversial call at the end. Lou Williams hit a bucket that would have put the Lakers up by two, instead was called for an offensive foul. What was kind of your take on that play?
First of all, just confusion and not being able to fathom that Lou Williams is even able to be called for offensive fouls. Yeah, I mean, like 99% of the time the whistle's going the other way. But a little bit of that, but it was just kind of a weird theme of the game. I think they called a ton of offensive fouls just on screens and charges and everything. It was just a weirdly officiated game overall. Yeah.
It's been a long time since I've seen a defender grab the offensive player's off arm and pull it towards him and then flop like he got hit. Props to JJ.
Shout out to JJ Barrett.
Yeah. Where's Andrew Bynum when you need him, you know?
I think I tweeted out twice how much I hate JJ Bray, and both times somebody asked if I was Andrew Bynum.
Hey, man, it could be kind of believable. Who knows what Bynum's up to these days? He's probably building a computer somewhere, but
or bowling.
So I think is it fair to say that Lou Williams got Lou Williamsed on that play?
Yeah, a little bit, just defensively instead of offensively.
Yeah, it's a tough call because, you know, if Barea is called for reaching in and grabbing Williams' arm and pulling it towards his body, you know, that's an and one, and the Lakers could go up by three. They're in the final seconds, and, you know, Dallas would have needed a three or a quick two to try and just extend the game. Either way, it was, you know, a huge swing because on the next possession, Dirk hit a jumper with 2.1 seconds to go, and that was it. Lakers gave it to Randall about 30 feet from the basket, and he got up a somewhat decent look from three, but not really a look that you want to give to him individually. But, so controversial call, but, you know, might have cost the Lakers the game, but it helped them in the tank race, I guess. So, you know, that's the silver lining behind it, I guess.
Dirk Nowitzki is a tank commander for the honorary tank commander for the Lakers tonight.
Yeah, I'm guessing that's why Kobe was patting him on the back.
Probably. He did good.
He's like, thanks, my man. Appreciate it. For those people that didn't get a chance to watch the game like me, or really don't know any of the details, Kobe did not play tonight. And let's just talk about, I guess, his shoulder. He sat out because of his shoulder injury. And basically said that there's times where he lays down in bed and it just aches. It really hurts, and he has to kind of prop it up with a pillow and just hope and pray that it feels better the next day. And it just sounds like that shoulder injury is really, really weighing on him. And, you know, he did say a few days ago or a few games ago that if he was going to sit out a game, it was for a serious reason. Like, there's, you know, justification behind it because he wants to play in all these games in the, you know, final, I think it's 35, 36 games of his career. So just talk about kind of your thoughts on, you know, what you think, on not only the injury, but how you think Kobe's going to manage it moving forward. Do you see him missing a lot of games, or do you see him just kind of gutting it out and just doing what he can?
I don't know. It's the whole thing is such a scary situation because obviously we all want to see him in as many games as possible. But at the same time, I think the biggest thing is we want to see him during that last game at home against Utah, because that would just be the perfect way to say bye to him. Mm-hmm. I could see him trying to just play every single game pretty much, but I don't think it's possible at this point. Just this shoulder thing that's been bothering him for like a month now, or maybe more.
Yeah.
Plus the sore Achilles that's been bothering him for a while. And I'm sure there's a bunch of other things going on as well.
Yeah.
That we just don't know about. And I don't know. It doesn't seem possible for him to be able to play as many minutes as he does in as many games as he does.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, who knows what's going on with Kobe's body? I've said this a number of times, but I'm just almost amazed that the guy can even, like, run for extended periods of time, you know, yeah. given, the mileage and the injuries that and the surgeries that have just piled up over the years. I mean, sometimes I have trouble getting out of bed in the morning, and I'm 23 years old. You know, I can't imagine what a 37-year-old, 20-year NBA veteran has to deal with, not to mention all the playoff minutes he's played too. So, you know, if he needs to take a couple games off, you know, do it. I mean, I guess it's better to sit the home games, you know, although, you know, there's still going to be fans that that's like their only game they're going to see all season. So he's going to be disappointing some people, but, you know, I mean, what can you ask of the guy? He's, I can't even imagine what his body, what it feels like. So yeah. Okay. So we mentioned D'Angelo Russell, how he played a little bit better in the fourth quarter, and Byron Scott had some interesting comments regarding Russell after the game, because I don't know how much time was left. You would know better than me, but he took, he pulled D'Angelo Russell with a few minutes left in the game?
I think about 2 minutes.
Okay. So yeah, he pulled him with 2 minutes left in the game, and his reasoning was that he thought Russell was trying to take over the game, which, you know, and he talked about, you know, wanting to keep the ball moving and things like that. But this is so, I'd understand Byron, you know, going, you know, reasoning it with, you know, he wants ball movement and, you know, guys to move the basketball. But, I mean, isn't that kind of, kind of a contradiction because of a certain other guard that's on the team?
Certain few guards on the team, like pretty much every single guard on this team tries to go one-on-one and score. I do understand the thought process behind it. Like I get that he doesn't want D'Angelo just, you know, hogging the ball and playing one-on-five every single time. I totally get that, and I think that's fair to say. Contextually, it doesn't make sense because, like you said, there's a bunch of different players on this team that do the same thing. Lakers like isolate players more often than pretty much every other team, maybe every single other team. There's also the fact that D'Angelo was playing really well in the fourth quarter and he was their best player at that time, and he had a really great mismatch against JJ Barea and another good one against Ray Felton. I mean, I could go on and on, but there's like a bunch of reasons why overall this doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, it's, I mean, the whole reason you draft a guy with the number two pick is you're hoping that he becomes a cornerstone for your franchise, a guy that is going to step up in those moments and try and win you a basketball game. And, you know, then you bench the kid for trying to do that, you know. And it's something we've seen Kobe do throughout his entire career. You know, we saw him shoot, what, 3 or 4 air balls in a playoff game that eliminated the Lakers from contention, you know. And he, you know, Kobe, as this 18-year-old kid, tried to take over a game, and, you know, it shaped really the rest of his career, just that whole learning experience going through that. And, you know, Russell tries to take over a game, and he gets pulled for it. It's and he gets pulled by a coach that just, like, worships Kobe Bryant, everything that he does, and has no problem when Kobe tries to take over a game, you know. So,
And more importantly, like, as soon as they pull him, they start going to these sets where it's ISO Lou Williams or ISO Jordan Clarkson. They call a timeout with whatever, like, 2 seconds left, and they can't run anything. Or they call another timeout, and their play out of that timeout is an ISO. Like, it doesn't make sense that you pull this guy out, and then your offense just goes into what you don't want it to go into.
Right. It just, I mean, I don't know. I mean, we've talked about it extensively throughout the year. Just Byron's reasoning for things is it's pretty crazy. But let me go ahead and I'll read you guys the quote. So this was Byron on confidence versus cockiness with D'Angelo Russell. He said, I love the fact that he has confidence. When it gets to the point that is cockiness, then we have a problem. And then when asked how far he is from that, he said, I think he's pretty close. I don't think he's there. I think he just feels right now that he has a lot of confidence in himself. That's a good thing. You don't get this far without having that. sometimes you don't get this far without a little cockiness as well, but you don't want that to overshadow the confidence that he has. Because I think when you get cocky, you're thinking there's nothing that you can't do. And if you think that, then you stop working. Any thoughts on that?
That's a, just the weird sentence in general, or weird statement. I mean, I don't know why he's like trying to explain the difference between confidence and cockiness, like he's talking to the fourth grade English class. But just in general, like, again, I understand the whole concept of you want this guy to play within the flow of the offense and everything, but it goes back to everything, every problem we've had with Bayern over the past 2 years. Or 1.5 years is that he ends up going in front of the media and basically saying that this kid doesn't get it or whatever.
Yeah. It's well, same thing. Yeah. My favorite bit was the, you know, you don't get this far without having that in terms of having a lot of confidence. You know, you acknowledge that that's kind of what it takes in the NBA, and yet you're going to bench the kid every single time. You know, he's kind of letting his confidence go to work, you know. Mm-hmm. It's just it's incredibly frustrating, it's baffling, it's all kinds of things. I mean, I don't, like I said, we've talked about it over and over and over and over again, but man, I mean, you can tell just from social media outlets and stuff that fans, this might be like the low point of the season in terms of Byron, you know. He's done some dumb things most of the year, but this is right up there with them. So
I got so mad because I think they had a lineup of D'Angelo, Lou Williams, Jordan Clarkson, Julius Randle, and Larry Nance. And they brought in Lou for somebody, I don't remember who. I think they brought him in for Nick Young. Or they brought Jordan Clarkson in for Nick Young, whichever one. But I kind of wanted Nick Young in instead of Lou Williams because Young was playing a really, really good game, like on both ends of the floor. And I was like, okay, whatever. It doesn't really matter. And as soon as I said that, about just a second later, to bring Nick Young in for D'Angelo Russell, I'm like, no, not like this. That's not what I wanted.
Yeah, that seems to be the case most of the year, is that like you want something done, it's like, Byron actually does it, but he does it in like the worst way possible. You know, it's, and I've said this before about Byron, like the obvious stuff, he seems to figure out about 3 weeks after everybody else does. And that includes just fans in general. Yeah. You know, it's like, oh, finally he figures it out. And that's kind of what I'm wondering about this whole D'Angelo Russell coming off the bench thing. It's like, yeah, like eventually I think he'll be back in the starting lineup, but it's going to be far after everybody else has already been saying that he should be there, you know? So, yeah, I mean, it's just Byron doing some of the things that he does, I guess, you know? So, yeah, speaking of things that Byron does, let's talk a little bit about his little Instagram scandal. I can't believe this is actually something that happened, but for those that haven't heard about it, Byron Scott does have an Instagram. I don't think he has a Twitter, Facebook, or whatever, but he does have an Instagram.
There's a ton of parody accounts, though.
Yeah, ton of parody accounts, but he has an actual Instagram account, and he posted a video of him doing kind of like a boxing training workout type deal. And he responded to a fan who said something along the lines of, "You better have those hands when I see you," or something like that. And he basically responded back to the fan who didn't have a picture, who was saying, he just said, "Bring it," you know, like he was ready to square up with him. And he said, "Show your face, don't hide." So Byron had a little spat with a fan on Instagram there about getting together and throwing some fists, apparently. But what were your thoughts when you saw that?
It's the greatest thing he's done in his Lakers tenure. Oh man, that is so hilarious. I can't get over that. Like, I don't know if it's actually him running the, I think earlier this year there was something else and he said he had an assistant that did it for him. But yeah. I really hope, and this time he said it was hacked. Mm-hmm. because you know.
That's what every athlete or coach or celebrity says whenever they do something stupid on social media. It's just, oh, I was hacked.
I kind of want to start doing that, but I don't think I have the credibility to get away with it.
Yeah, we've seen it with former Laker players this year. We saw it with Devin Ebanks and Darius Morris, who were calling out Byron Scott, and then later deleted the tweets and said that they were hacked. It's like, come on, like really?
But you know who didn't? That was Steven Jackson. Steven Jackson was
was on video saying all this stuff. You know Steven Jackson's never gonna pull any punches. I mean, he was right up there in the stands with Ron Artest throwing punches at fans at the Palace. So he's not gonna pull.
Can we get a Byron Scott and Steven Jackson fight?
Oh man, that would be something. Throw him in the octagon and just let him go. No, it was. I mean, I don't really buy that he was hacked. I think Byron might have just been at a point where he was just sick and tired of, fans. Because, I mean, if you go on probably any of his Instagram pictures, I'm not hardly ever on Instagram, but I'm sure he has a lot of negative comments and a lot of, comments saying, quit coaching the Lakers or something along those lines. So he might have just gotten sick of it and somebody threatened him. He might just need to take out some frustration. So I don't know. It's all I'm saying is I don't think we'd see Luke Walton do something like that on Instagram. Hint, hint. Lakers management.
The other thing we need is Byron to get in a fight about Kobe and take somebody to Temecula.
Yeah, meet me at Temecula. Temecula, man. Oh. All right, we talked enough about Byron and his little Instagram. Let's go ahead and just transition to some of the questions that we got. I'm going to have to sort through some of these because, there's a lot. A lot of comments, general comments and stuff. Most of the people, it seems like, are pretty happy. I wouldn't say happy, but sort of content that the Lakers lost today, kind of for Team Tank, I guess.
Yeah,
Sixers won today, for those that don't know. So there are only two wins behind the Lakers now. They have 7 wins to the Lakers' 9. So all of a sudden, Lakers might get the highest lottery odds possible. It doesn't guarantee that they'll keep the pick. Moves them up by about 9%. But, it's better than where they're at, I guess. So
yeah, this is the best thing Mike D'Antoni's done for the Lakers.
Yeah, D'Antoni's... He hurt Team Tank a couple of years ago, dropped to 7th, although I think they still got the guy they wanted. But, now he's turning Ish Smith into, the MVP, and all of a sudden, the Sixers are winning some games. So, okay, the first question, I'm going to let you answer this because you were tweeting about Harry Potter last night. This is from Kyle, and he just asked, which Laker is Neville Longbottom?
I forgot to think more about this, but I'm going to go because I asked him about what version of Neville Longbottom, and he said the third book, but I'm going to go earlier just because it's easier, and I'm going to say Marcelo Huertas because he basically doesn't do anything, and he's comic relief.
I'll just say Ryan Kelly because they kind of look alike.
Oh, okay.
Like when Kelly's not, looking like he was, stranded in the woods for, 2 years, but when Kelly's clean cut and shaves and everything, he kind of looks like Neville a little bit. So
I'll go
with that. Okay, next question. Josiah Woods asks, why can't Byron draw a good sideline out of bounds plays?
I don't know, man, because he sucks. maybe his marker was dead.
Yeah, we'll go with that. His marker was dried out. He was just go out there. Now I'll say he's probably too busy staring into the upper section of the Staples Center. When I was at the Lakers Blazers game on Saturday, he spent literally an entire timeout just staring up into the stands. I don't know what he was looking at, but the entire team just sitting over there on the bench and his coaching staff, they're just out pretty much in the key area, just way away from the bench, just staring into the crowd.
Maybe he was looking for the fan who was going to beat up about it.
Yeah. He was looking for whoever he was going to meet in Temecula. Okay, another question from Josiah Woods. He asks, is Jordan Clarkson clutch? Would you consider JC clutch?
Sure. He had a really nice bucket, I think, right after D'Angelo Russell got benched at the end of the game, where he went right through the paint, I think left to right, and laid it up there. I think he's, I don't know, I kind of just don't like the term clutch in general, but I think he has enough talent and mindset to be able to take over games, as much as Bayern doesn't like that.
Yeah, and that's the thing for me is, you know, clutch situations are always really hard, you know. And
yeah.
I mean, even some of the top, like, clutch players, when you look at, like, Kobe and Jordan, like, whoever, like, their clutch shooting percentage usually isn't that great, you know.
Yeah.
To me, if you're willing and you're confident to step up and try and make those plays in those situations, I mean, to me, that's clutch. Because, like, if you have that confidence, like, I believe that you'll make those plays, you know, at times. You know, you're not going to make them every time. Nobody does, you know. And there's a reason why those situations are so difficult. So, but no, he's shown on a couple of occasions, you know, throughout his very young career, especially with the Sixers game last year, where he pretty much pissed the fan base off by beating the game winner. So, but no, he's shown, you know, the tendency to step up in those big moments, you know, so.
Yeah.
Okay, so this next question is from Nick, who is at the Real YP5. He asks, odds on the Lakers realizing something and shipping the pick plus Randall, and in parentheses, but it's most likely, so I think he's kind of loose on that, but and saying if we keep the pick for DeMarcus Cousins.
I don't think that'd get you DeMarcus Cousins. I think the Kings are rightly holding back on trading him in general, and also if they are going to trade him, they're going to want a whole lot of young talent and picks.
Yeah, I don't even think you really should bother with trying to trade DeMarcus Cousins, because with the Lakers, I don't know if they have enough. You know, you'd probably have to trade D'Angelo Russell, Jordan Clarkson, Julius Randle, and the number two or whatever, and the top three pick if we keep it. You know, I mean, what Cousins is doing right now, and I was kind of opposed to trading for him last year just because I wanted the pick plus the cap space, because I thought the Lakers were going to be a little bit smarter about it. But, you know, I mean, what he's doing this year, I mean, he had, what, like 40 and 15 or something like that, like 40 plus and 15 plus rebounds. And then he had
56, I think it was.
Yeah, he had 50, almost 60 points and like 13 rebounds last night. So, I mean,
I think I saw today he's the fourth guy to have 100 points and 25 rebounds in two games.
Yeah, I mean, he's just dominating. He's just dominating. Yeah. His game just keeps on excelling. I'd still like to see him become an elite defender. And, you know, obviously his emotional – he's an emotional roller coaster ride at times.
Yeah.
That kind of sucks. But, I mean, just the talent that he possesses, I mean, he's – really good. And if I were the Kings, I wouldn't trade him for anybody unless somebody offers me, you know, like Russell Westbrook or, you know, another like top five player in the league, you know. So, and the Lakers they don't have that. So, Josiah Woods asked, can we trade Scott to the Nets? I don't, as dysfunctional as the Nets are, I don't even think they would take him back. And then, okay.
Coach and GM job.
Yeah, as if things weren't bad enough in Brooklyn over there. Okay, Josiah also asked, how much do you trust the front office on a scale of 1 to 10?
How much do I trust them?
We'll say 10 being like most trust, 1 being least trust.
Okay, so I wouldn't trust them with my life because I don't know them, but I'll go like 6 or 7. I think they've done a really good job of getting talent, especially young players. Like, their drafting has been really good, and I don't know how much of that is just pure luck and how much of it is really good scouting and all of that. Probably a little bit of each. But the whole Bayern thing and letting them stay and a little bit of the free agency decisions kind of scare me off a little bit.
Yeah, I would. I mean, I'm honestly going to give them just a 5, just to be right in the middle, just for the reasons you mentioned. They have done a really good job of drafting in the past few years and acquiring some young talent. But I think there's been some trades that were on the table, like just maybe some veterans that they could have traded for some additional draft picks at the deadline that they didn't. Free agency has been just a disaster, you know, the way that they've kind of approached it. So they're good in some aspects. They still don't know how to hire a head coach other than Phil Jackson, apparently. Although D'Antoni, you know, although his record doesn't really say it, but D'Antoni, I think, is a good coach. I just think that first roster really wasn't built for his style of play. And yeah. Then after that, I mean, the Lakers' talent took a nosedive. So, but yeah, they'll hopefully need to address that in the offseason. So, and speaking of that, somebody mentions that it's a concern. I think Kupchak will extend or keep Byron after this season, which is quite frightening. I don't see how you can, but I understand that kind of mindset because the Lakers have shown a willingness to kind of give Byron some leeway. And, yeah. You know, he is a member of the Laker family, you know, so he's going to get treated a little bit differently. So that'll be one thing that's definitely interesting to watch when April or May rolls around. So, okay. And then, so at Lemoy24 asks, are there any reliable and dependable assistant coaches on the bench that could be an interim coach in place of Byron Scott, not named Mark Madsen?
That's kind of redundant. I honestly don't even remember. There's a Phil Pressey, right? I'm his first name, Phil. Yeah,
it's either Phil or Paul, because I always get him and the player always mixed.
Yeah, them. The player's his son, right?
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. I don't know that guy, I guess.
Yeah.
How about Kobe? Kobe's probably the most reliable assistant.
To be serious, like the Lakers, honestly, their coaching staff is not very good. I mean, they don't have any like long-term potential replacements like Cleveland did with Tyronn Lue. Although I think Lue is being a little bit overrated, you know, just because he doesn't have any experience. And he's kind of a guy that's going to cater to LeBron, but you know, he has potential though. You know, that's the thing with Lue. You're kind of going based off potential, not because of what you think he can do, I guess, right away. So
so
no, to answer the question, no, I don't think there's any really reliable assistant coaches. I think they're just going to ride out the season with Byron and then they'll address their options when the off season rolls around. So and the last question was, I've got this is from Jared McCarty. He asks, I've got no problem with the ball in Randall's hands at the end, but why was nothing drawn up going to the hoop? And I mean, we kind of talked about it a little bit. Byron, honestly, he is not a very brilliant play designer. And I think the Lakers still had a timeout they could have used to draw to basically reset. But no, I mean, we've seen it throughout the past year and a half, just Byron's sideline out of bounds plays and just plays out of timeouts usually aren't very creative. That's just what it is. You know, you would think that they'd get something going to the basket, but with 2.1 seconds, it is kind of tricky because you kind of have to catch and maybe get 1 to 2 dribbles and you can shoot, but you'd be cutting it pretty close. So
the weirdest thing for that, I think, is that if they were going to have like a perimeter shot, why have both Randall and Nance in the game and not someone like D'Angelo or whoever?
Yeah, it's – I don't know. Like the whole personnel thing has been kind of an issue here too. So I think you'd go maybe like 4 shooters and then Randall, because you don't need a center to like protect the basket or anything. It's, you know, it's an offensive. Right. So, yeah. I don't know. So that, with Byron all year, I don't know. Okay, so that's going to do it. That's the last of the questions that I get to. We're going to do just a quick lottery simulation. Now that Harrison and Matt are gone, maybe we'll have some good luck here. So go ahead and share my screen real quick. There we There we go. I always know when it's working because my screen turns into like 22 different screens. All right, so can you see everything all right?
Yes, sir.
All right, so as you can see, Philly, 7 wins, Lakers, 9 wins, Brooklyn at 12. Lakers, technically a game and a half away from the worst record in the league. They've lost 7 in a row, which is good for this.
Great.
And the Sixers are 4-6 in their last 10. I mean, if they keep going at that rate, they'll catch the Lakers in no time.
Okay,
so let's go. This will be our third simulation. The first simulation we did, the Lakers got the top pick. The second one with Harrison and Matt, they dropped to 4th, I think. So they did lose the pick. So, all right, here goes nothing. And they lost the pick. Okay.
Oh, man. I'm 0-3 today.
This is a terrible idea. I should have known that. And to make things worse, Boston got the number one pick. So thanks a lot. Man. Thanks a lot, Takenthon. I appreciate it.
Had the Lakers lose, I had the Nevada Wolfpack lose, and I had the Lakers lose the pick. This is the worst night of my life.
Yep. I'm going to have to find other people to come on the podcast. I'm going to have to find like a good luck charm. I'll just bring him on every time until we lose the pick while he's on. So.
Hey, man, my winning percentage is better than the Lakers. I'm 1-1.
That's true. You're 500 right now. That's good enough to get you in the playoffs.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, so that's going to do it for us. Thanks for everybody that tuned in and those that sent us questions. Just a reminder, we are on iTunes, so if you don't get a chance to follow us live or anything like that, you can always subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. We're just Lakers Outsiders, and we'll always have our podcast up hopefully the same night. If not, we'll have it up usually by the next morning. So, Hani, as always, thanks for joining me. Try and get one up again when the Lakers play their next game, and we'll go from there. Thanks again, everybody.